Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington.
And I'm also Michael Atit in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, October 27, 2014. Two Lake State lawmakers have been arrested by the state authorities and taken to a known location.
Honorable Mari Nanga and Honorable Isaac Mankurboy, they were being detained 3 days back, and then they were being in police headquarters.
At least one person was killed and 9 others injured during ethnic clashes at Kakuma refugee camp in Kenya.
Last night there was conflict between two communities in Kakuma refugee camp. And here I'm talking about Nuer and Dinka, because there was alleged rape of a 10-year-old girl and from one of the communities.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus.
Lawmakers in Lake State are calling on state authorities to release two of their colleagues who were picked up by police over the weekend. Abraham Makoi says Marik Nganga, Marik, who represent Rumbek North County in the state assembly, and another lawmaker are being held in a known location. Makoi says Lake State authorities should explain why the two lawmakers were arrested in the first place.
Honorable Marik Nganga and Honorable Isaac Mankurboy, they were being detained 3 days back, and then they were being in police headquarters of Rumbek Central County. At the night, something to 1 o'clock, unknown forces came to them at the night, and then they were being given about three policemen who were being guarding them. So those three policemen, they were being disarmed, their mobile telephone were taken from them, and their rifle also, they were taken. And then there were two honorable were being taken to the car, and then they were escorted to Yirul. Somebody was been communicating with us here in Rumbek. His telephone is not functioning up to date. So we don't know where these two honorable, where they are.
My understanding is that you cannot just arrest a member of parliament like that until you revoke his immunity. Is that correct?
Yes, that is a normal system, that any member, if he has made any commitment, authority in that particular area, like Lady said here, procedure that he should do first, he should have write a letter to the speaker of the assembly asking the immunity of those members who have been accused by any criminal act, so that the immunity to be lifted. Here, the governor does not did that. He has just arrested these MPs without any warning.
Why were the two MPs arrested by state authorities in Lake State?
Well, there is no charges. There is no charges. These members, the assembly now is on recess. And 2 weeks back, the state governor, he has declared that assembly must go for another recess for 3 months. These particular two members, they talked with the speaker some days back. They were being saying, what are the oversight of the assembly? Assembly, now it was in the test for almost 6 months, and it is going again for another more three months, so that can make 9 months. This should not happen. They were talking to the speaker. I think their concern was taken to the governor. This is why he arrested them.
I also understand you were trying to go to Juba and you were taken off the plane. Is that right?
Yes, I'm the one. I was also prevented not to go to Juba. There was no reason also. Up to date, I had 2 days now. I was supposed to go on last Friday. And then I was told to come back to Rumbeka. I came, and I'm just waiting to get the result why I was called back.
That's Abraham Makoi, member of Lake State Assembly representing Rumbek Town. One of the arrested lawmakers, Marik, told South Sudan in Focus last week that the authorities in Lake State are not doing enough to calm tension there after 9 people were killed in fighting between SPLA and youth at the cattle camp. One person was killed and several others injured when members of 2 South Sudanese communities clashed over the weekend at Kakuma refugee camp in northeastern Kenya. Emmanuel Nyabera is the spokesperson for the UNHCR in Kenya. He says local police are investigating the incident and the UNHCR is working with South Sudanese community leaders to prevent further acts of violence at Kakuma camp.
Last night there was conflict between 2 communities in Kakuma refugee camp. And here I'm talking about Nuer and Dinka, because there was alleged rape of a 10-year-old girl and from one of the communities. And the response became a little bit not very, very good, because the 2 communities started fighting and there were around 8 people who were injured. There's an alleged 1 person, a youth, who was killed. And the police intervened. And so as we speak now, the situation is calm. But this happened in Kakuma 4. Situation in Kakuma 1, 2, and 3 have been taken care of.
Is this to do with a spillover of what is happening in South Sudan?
I wouldn't say that. I wouldn't say that as I speak to you, because police are investigating. So I don't have the capacity to talk authoritatively about what happened. But then it's just because there was one person who was allegedly raped, and that caused conflict between the 2 communities. So I wouldn't say that it has anything to do with what's happening in Southern Sudan. Later on, as things develop, then we can find out what.
And what is the current number of South Sudanese refugees in Kenya?
Since mid-December, we have seen a flow of people coming in, more than 38,000 people who have come in from South Sudan into Kakuma refugee camp. Most of them have been accommodated, and we are negotiating with the government to give us more land so that we can be in a position to accommodate people in a dignified manner.
This kind of incident that happened on Sunday, is it common occurrence among the 2 communities? Because what happened in Juba really polarized the country in South Sudan into, you know, ethnic division. Is this a common occurrence in this refugee camp where 2 communities fight each other?
I won't talk about 2 communities. I'm talking about, you know, we are in a situation where there are so many communities, so many refugees from different nationalities in this country. And all that we keep telling them is that there's need for coexistence, for people to work together, people to obey the law of the land. So this is something that we consistently tell refugees. So I wouldn't say that this is something specific or peculiar about Southern Sudanese.
The situation in the camp is under control. The police is investigating. What are the community leaders doing from the 2 groups? What are the community leaders doing to resolve this situation?
All we do all the time, we work very closely with the community leaders, because we believe that in a asylum situation like this, there's need for coexistence. And we work very closely with community leaders to make people know that they have to live together in a good manner, in a peaceful manner, and support each other, because it's not easy to be in asylum. In asylum, people need to work together. We're working very closely with community leaders now to try and, you know, make sure that everything goes back to normalcy.
That's Emmanuel Nyabera, the UNHCR spokesman in Kenya. He was speaking with me earlier today from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi.
The United Nations Mission in South Sudan, or UNMISS, is running a campaign in WAO to fight a growing problems of sexual abuse of young girls. UN officials say they hope the campaign will raise awareness among the local communities about the problem and how to fight it. For VOA News, Nabil Biajo has the story.
19-year-old Isra Saleh Umar is a student at Al Mukhtar Secondary School in WAO. She says poverty plays a big role in forcing many girls into abusive sexual relationships.
Some girls are given little money by their parents for lunch, and if she meets someone who can give her more money, this situation forces many girls to be victims of sexual abuse. Girls are weak, and in such circumstances will definitely surrender.
Chitra Subramoni, who is in charge of the UNMISS program in WOW, says the UN wants girls to know
they should not be sexually exploited by any section of the community, or rather from any person who is in a position of power and who can be able to give them material things in life like mobile phones or cars.
Subramoni says more than 700 girls at 6 schools in WOW have participated in the program so far. The UN uses sports activities and drama workshops to get the message across to the girls. Bakhita Awad is one of the girls who have taken part in the program. She is in her third year at Umbili Secondary School. She says parents also need to be educated about sexual exploitation of their daughters. One thing they need to be taught is how to take legal action against people who abuse girls.
If a girl is sexually abused, no parent should keep silent or agree to cover up in exchange for little money. They should take the abuser to court.
Subramoni says the girls themselves have a role to play in holding their abusers accountable. They need to report all cases of abuse.
So don't become a victim of exploitation. He might leave you with nothing except this pregnancy and a child, which is not a good future for you. So exploitation by any person, especially by UN personnel, please report to UNMISS CDT, break the silence, speak up.
The UN Secretary General's Special Representative on Sexual Violence in Conflict, Zainab Bangura, said during a visit to South Sudan earlier this month that women and children in the country are the victims of the worst sexual violence she has ever seen. During her visit, Bangura and the government of South Sudan released a statement outlining steps that will be taken to prevent and address sexual violence. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, President Kiir uses the governor's forum to say he will not step down. That story is coming after this.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
do you have a special talent, and what is it?
Handball. I'm good in handball. Yeah, I can say that. That's my special talent, and I can dance.
I have a special talent. I used to sing because I was a choir member. Then when I used to sing, I really feel comfortable, happy in my heart because that is my talent.
I believe that I've not really like identified my talent for now. I'm into everything. I'm not really focused on what I do. I believe that God created me for something. There's something I'm still to identify that I believe I can do.
My special talent is comedy. I have some comic talents in me. Yeah, that I rest assured that's my special talent.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. At an opening session of a governor's conference in Juba today, President Salva Kiir rejected the rebels' calls to step down as a condition for peace to return. The forum was intended to convey national leaders and examine national policies. But as Wake Simon Wudu reports from Juba, tensions related to the ongoing conflict prevail over all other issues.
President Kiir told the hundreds of senior government officials, governors, and diplomats who were attending a four-day policy forum that he can only be moved from his presidential seat by the voters who brought him to power. Alluding to rebels loyal to former Vice President Riek Machar, Mr. Kiir said that Riek's forces insist
that the only way to reconcile the people of South Sudan is for me to resign and go. I told them that this is a non-starter. The people who brought me to this office will also tell me to go, not you.
President Kiir told the government officials that his resignation alone would not improve the functioning of the cabinet that he would leave behind if he resigns.
If today I step down and then I go home,
Who among you here, the ministers and all those who are holding positions in the government, who will be in the government then? Unless if you are a fifth column within our government. And if you are not, you will find yourselves tomorrow behind bars.
In his address, Mr. Kiir says more collective efforts are needed from all government agencies to reconcile the fragmented developmental efforts that were crippled by the conflict that broke out last year in December.
This senseless war was devastating, and this requires more efforts in terms of rehabilitation and reconstruction. It is our collective responsibility to ensure that there is stability in the country and lives of all the citizens are secured.
The South Sudan Governors Forum is a government initiative launched in 2006 and backed by the United Nations Development Programme, or UNDP, in South Sudan. The objective is to improve government policies and improve service delivery. Organized always by the Office of the President, the Minister in the Office of the President, Awan Gwal Riak, says that today's ongoing forum was expected to identify resolutions and plans of action for peace, unity, and reconciliation that can be examined henceforth to move the country towards democracy, equitable service delivery, conflict resolution, and sustainable development. This is the fourth Governors Forum President Kiir's office has hosted since South Sudan gained independence in 2011. However, some governors who spoke to VOA today say the forum has lost its meaning and that the program needs to be reconsidered. Nyandeng Malik is the governor of Warap State.
This forum is a well-put forum that the governors come and raise their challenges. But unfortunately, the resolution of all these forums, most of it is not implemented. If they were to be implemented, I think much would have been improved by now, especially in sector of road, in food security, in school education and health. We need to work harder than now. We need the national government to decentralize resources because the resources are not decentralized. This is where the issue is because we need money to implement those things.
And Joseph Bangasi Bakasoro, the governor of Western Equatorial State, agrees.
I think what they call the governor's forum, for me, I don't see it now, governor's forum. It looks like a national forum because the governors are not given enough time to express and give their report. Most of the government officials are the one giving reports, and the governors are given only 30 minutes to give a report of a whole year.
For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Odo from Juba.
Last week, we welcomed Luc Petit to South Sudan in Focus Studios. Petit is a Canadian author who has written a book called The New Kings of Crude. Our web editor Karen Zaivogo spoke with him about the changing relationship between South Sudan and China and how the Chinese are no longer calling all the shots.
It was the middle of Sudan's civil war in the 1990s when China first went into southern Sudan to extract oil and send it back home. Petit says in his book The New Kings of Crude that back then the relationship between China and Sudan was pretty one-sided. Chinese workers float into Sudan and Sudanese oil float out toward China. Beijing essentially ran its oil operations in Sudan the way it wanted to. But Petit says that started to change in 2008 when a Chinese oil worker was killed in Sudan.
This oil worker, Chui Lei Lei, he was a 26-year-old trained as a plumber who came to Sudan to really, you know, earn a higher wage than he could at home. And he was part of this group of Chinese oilmen that was kidnapped in October 2008. And five of them were killed as a result of a botched rescue attempt by the Sudanese government. That really, you know, shocked, I think, the system of CNPC because they had had attacks on their operations overseas before. This wasn't even the worst one for Chinese national oil companies. But this happened in Sudan, which was sort of the heart, the crown jewel of CNPC's international portfolio. So that really caused them to think more seriously about security risk and to start to implement measures, to start training staff on security issues, to start sort of having early warning systems set up at subsidiaries. And we see the sensitivity has increased. When CNPC came to a united Sudan in the 1990s, they had thousands of workers basically operating in a war zone. When South Sudan's civil war started last December, we saw them take hundreds of workers out of the oil regions to Juba and out of the country very quickly. They didn't want news to come out that oil workers were under attack, that oil workers were killed.
What has changed over the years in the way Chinese companies and the government of China interact with countries in Africa?
When China and CNPC, its national oil corporation, first went into Sudan in the late 1990s, this was, you know, a big operational success story, that they were able to produce oil from a foreign country and bring it back home and make a tremendous have a tremendous financial benefits from it. But now in today, Sudan and South Sudan are more like test cases for these corporations in dealing with political and security risk. And Sudan and South Sudan have become sort of a venue where China can explore its new sort of diplomatic engagement, sort of pilot diplomacy, trying new things that they normally wouldn't do, suggesting that they mediate between the two sides in South Sudan's civil war, going sort of beyond their traditional foreign policy of non-interference in the domestic affairs of foreign countries. If you think back to the peace agreement to end the North-South civil war, which stopped in 2005, China was really on the sidelines. And now, you know, arguably they're really sitting alongside the United States and others in trying to help a peace come about. So this is China really stepping out of its shell.
Okay, so it's almost like the little brand new country, South Sudan, is having a big impact not only on China, but on the rest of the world.
Yeah, to a certain degree. I think South Sudan, because of its politics, because of the civil war, is having an impact on not only the strategy of companies like CNPC that are operating there, but also Chinese foreign policy, that they're pushing Chinese foreign policy to in new directions because Chinese citizens and Chinese investments are coming into harm's way. And that's sort of the main idea I want to try to convey in the book, I wanted to put forward in the book, was that when we look at this relationship between China and the African continent and African countries, we often see it as China having a strong economic and political impact on Africans. Well, I think the reverse is also true, and the Sudans are great examples of that, that Africa can have an impact on China's policy.
That was author Luke Petty speaking about his book, The New Kings of Crude, with Karen Zaivogo. We'll bring you more of Karen's discussion with Petty about China and South Sudan's oil tomorrow.
Authorities say at least 50,000 people in Jonglei State, Tweedjis County, are in urgent need of food. Farmers have been unable to work their fields during the more than 10 months long conflict, and flooding has also weakened the food supply. Half of those needing food are IDPs from neighboring counties. As Philip Thorne Aleu reports for VOA from Bor, the only way to get food to Tweedjis County is by airdrop, a very expensive and complicated operation.
Dao Akoi, the commissioner of Tweedjis County, says 25,000 people who need food assistance took refuge in the county after fleeing from neighboring Du County at the peak of the fighting in March. Speaking by phone from Panyagor, some 75 kilometers north of Bor, Akoi says the last distribution of basic food items such as flour and beans was halted in July after heavy rains submerged the seasonal road linking Tweedjis County to Bor, the capital of Jonglei State. Agauding, Tweedjis County coordinator in Bor, says the conditions are dire.
The situation there in the county is actually bad because of the flood, but last 2 weeks there's no more rain, whereby they can have any assistance from any humanitarian agencies. They expect to be this month, not next month, because maybe by the end of this month there will be more rain. They cannot even imagine to reach there.
Agao says the 75-kilometer road is still underwater, so any food supplies should be airlifted. He says people have been too afraid to till their gardens this year because of the ongoing fighting.
No cultivation this year because of this crisis and the flood down. They cannot manage to do that. There's no means of transport. The road transport is not there unless by air. Currently, there is no more water down there. maybe within the airport is okay.
Catholic Relief Services and Joint Aid Management are two humanitarian organizations that have distributed food items in the region. The food was airdropped by the World Food Program, or WFP, in Tooch East County before flooding made those reports impossible. Local humanitarian officials say a feasibility study is underway to determine if airdrops could resume immediately. WFP officials could not be reached for comment. For BOA News, I am Philip Tonaleu in Bor.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here are some of today's news headlines with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. A suicide bomber has killed at least 24 Shiite militiamen near an Iraqi town government forces say they had recaptured from Islamic State militants. Today's blast occurred at a security checkpoint outside Jurf al-Sakar, wounding another 25. The attacker was driving a Humvee vehicle packed with explosives. Iraqi Prime Minister Haider al-Abadi said yesterday recapturing Jurf al-Sakar, located about 50 kilometers south of Baghdad, was what he called a fatal blow against the Islamic State group. The Sunni extremists held the town since July. The U.S. ambassador to the United Nations is calling attention to the need for a greater response to the Ebola outbreak that has killed now nearly 5,000 people in West Africa. Samantha Power posted on Twitter today, after spending a day in Guinea, that the scale of need is staggering and that the most basic resources will help save lives. She is on a multi-stop tour this week of the worst-hit countries, including Sierra Leone and Liberia. Powers' visit to West Africa comes amid a decision by Governor Andrew Cuomo of New York State to revise his state's quarantine policy on health care workers who return to the United States after treating Ebola patients in West Africa. And finally, Ukraine's President Petro Poroshenko says exit polls from yesterday's parliamentary elections show strong support for his push for democratic reforms and for closer ties to the European Union. The exit polls show Mr. Poroshenko's bloc with 23% of the vote, a tally substantially short of an outright majority. Prime Minister Arseniy Yatsenyuk's Popular Front followed with 21%. Nearly 3 million voters in pro-Russian separatist-controlled eastern Ukraine were unable to cast their ballots on Sunday. Rebel leaders say they will conduct their own polls on November 2nd. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Damme.
And that's our show for this Monday. We now leave you with some Avokaya traditional music from Tore in Central Equatorial State.
We've been listening to an amazing Avukaya traditional music from Tore in Central Equatoria State. I'm Michael Atit in Washington.
And I'm John Tanza, also here in Washington. Thanks for listening. We hope you will be here again tomorrow with us for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.